entitled Tom Terrific. Hopefully have, or at least work your way towards terrific holidays. And I think all of us are aware a lot of things can impact your holidays. A lot of things can make a mess of them. It can be all kinds of things, whether it's, it could be the weather, depending on who it is. Your football team loses on Thanksgiving Day. It may mess up your whole day. And so a lot of things can influence it. We talked about last week about messing up the food and the Butterball hotline and some of the calls that they get. It's kind of amazing to me that it's to that point where we have to have a call-in line for people to be able to prepare their Thanksgiving lunch. But it's amazing all the different things that people call in about. I read on in that list, and there was one lady who answers the call in, the hotline, and she got a call from a young man. Now, this one was really, really interesting. It wasn't a problem with his turkey. It wasn't that he didn't know how to baste it or stuff it or what temperature to cook it at. This young man had a far more serious problem. He was at the grocery store and didn't know what to buy. And so she stayed on the phone with him as he walked through the grocery store picking up every item he would need for his Thanksgiving meal, including the turkey. And she just walked him through the whole process. The amazing part of that story is as I read that, she didn't have to tell him how to cook it once he got it. She just had to tell him how to get it. That one was a little bit unique among the Butterball stories. One of them was a story of a lady lady was the one who answered the call, and it was a new dad. He was really rattled, and he called Butterball, and legitimate concern. He was concerned that their turkey had been laying out too long. His wife had just had a baby, and they had laid their turkey out to thaw, and then evidently his wife had went into labor, and they had went to the hospital, and he was concerned about how long the turkey had been out, if it was still good or not. And so as they were talking, the Butterball lady, that's probably not the way they want to be called. The Butterball Hotline Expert Lady, how's that? Asked him, said, "Well, how much does it weigh?" The dad paused a minute and said, "The baby or the turkey?" He was a little confused in the whole situation. Another man, one of my favorites, was a man called in, and he was really stressed out because his turkey was too big to go in his oven. Now, I don't know which one I want to see, the turkey or the oven, but anyway, his turkey was too big to go into his oven, and so he was calling to get some advice about what he should do. And while he was talking to us, I got an idea, and while they were talking, he took his turkey and he wrapped it up in a towel, laid it down, and stomped on it and broke some bones and packed it down, and he said, "That works. It fits in the oven now." And he was really happy and proud of himself for being able to get it in the oven. And so, I don't know, I guess that beats not getting it in the oven, doesn't it? Works, don't it, Debbie? Microwave queen over there. Or it could be like Caleb and I was walking along at the show this week and saw an idea for everybody on turkey. They had made a turkey out of Rice Krispie treats. She made one. Now, what was really interesting was they made part of him out of regular Rice Krispies and part of him out of chocolate Rice Krispies so you could have white meat or dark meat. I thought, that's somebody with what? And the best part of all of it was my wife grabbing a bite of it and tasting it out, knowing it was covered in chocolate, and she hates chocolate. So, I don't know about y'all, but I think a Rice Krispie treat turkey might sound better than a turkey anyway, because you like turkey, huh? But, you can mess up, a lot of things to mess up Thanksgiving. A lot of things come into play. Last week we talked about anger and how anger divides families, how anger can ruin our holidays, cause us either sometimes you know it. Everybody here, if it hasn't happened to you, you know of a family that it has happened to, where at a particular holiday gathering, somebody didn't come because they were angry, because there was a division in the family, and so they just didn't come. Or they said, if he comes, I'm not coming. So we know anger can affect our holidays. And you know, maybe you know, the worst part of that may be that there's anger and they do all gather in one place and the anger breaks out. And so, you know, anger can certainly affect the tone of a holiday season. One of the other biggies that most of us are aware of, and that's the issue of depression. Depression creeps up around this time of year. It pops up. It's a year-long problem, but I think it is aggravated and highlighted during the holiday season, even to the point where, as I studied this week, I found out that during this time of year, they've actually even given it a name for this time of year. It's called Seasonal Affective Disorder, or SAD. Or sad. And part of that is activated. Part of it is made worse because of the extra hours of darkness. But I think most of us are aware that this time of year, you may not qualify it as depression, but sadness, discouragement, things happen that that cause sometimes this the Thanksgiving, Christmas holidays to be a lonely or a sad time. I think about this weekend as we celebrate Veterans Day. There'll be a lot of folks who have Thanksgiving and Christmas this year with their sons and daughters, husbands, wives, mothers, fathers, somewhere overseas. And so certainly that would add to the discouragement, the depressing nature of Christmas. There are most every family has someone who was in the family last Christmas that rather passed away or moved away or whatever, won't be part of the family. Won't be in the gathering this year, and that's discouraging. Sometimes parents, because they really want to get their child a certain gift and are unable to, whether they unable to find it or unable to afford it, not able to give their children the Christmas that maybe they would really like to, that they get discouraged and they're sad. A lot of things happen in the Thanksgiving Christmas season that can really kind of, as we might say, let the air out of our balloon. And they tend to, the things that maybe have went on all year long, maybe they're things that we think about all year long, but in particular around the holidays, they just seem to get a little extra pain to them, a little extra attention added to them. And so this morning I want to look at a psalm that I think helps us to be able to deal with this issue of depression, discouragement, loneliness, sadness, grief, pain, sorrow, whatever you want to call it. I think this psalm will help you. It was interesting, as I prepared, I went out and over the last week or so, I've talked to some preachers, and I said, tell me something. If you're going to preach on depression, what passage would you use? And it was interesting to me, everyone I asked said Psalm 77, which was the one I had picked out, which is one, I don't know, Diane's probably got it marked back there. If you've marked Psalm 77 every time I've preached it, you got a lot of writing, because I like this psalm. I think it is a great psalm. I think it really is a good psalm for several reasons when it comes to dealing with this issue of discouragement, depression, sorrow, loneliness, whatever you choose to call it. And that is that the psalmist gives us the whole story. He gives us all of it. We see stories in the Bible where it's obvious that someone is discouraged. We see stories in the Bible where someone gets over-discouraged. But what we have in this great psalm is the psalmist tells us both why he was discouraged, why he was depressed. He tells us what happened while he was depressed. And he tells us how he got over it. And so he gives it all to us in one spot. Now, I'm going to be honest with you today. I'm hitting the high spots. I just don't. There's too much in this psalm. There's too much there. And there's not enough time for me to get it all. So I'm going to encourage you. Go home and study this psalm on your own. There are some great, great lessons in this psalm in dealing with discouragement, depression, and being able to handle this. Now, I'm not saying it'll go away. If you, I'm not this morning trying to make light of anyone's circumstance or situation. I'm not trying to say it's not real. Not trying to say you don't hurt. Not trying to say, you know, for heaven's sake, I'm not trying to say that that some people don't need medicine for their discouragement. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm not telling you to go home and throw your medicine out. Matter of fact, you know, might even tell you to go home and double it. You know, it just, I don't know. I'm not in the medical field, okay? You know, I'm not saying that it's not real. I'm not trying to make light of your situation, your circumstance. I don't know how bad you hurt. I don't even know necessarily why you hurt. And so, I want you to look at this psalm with me and notice what he teaches in dealing with this topic. And he begins by telling us again why he's in this situation. He begins to tell us about his depression and what why he is there. And it's very interesting. And again, especially as we begin, I'm not trying to make light or discount your circumstance. But I do want to try to help you to look at it perhaps a little bit different. Have you ever maybe been looking up into the sky, looking up in the mountains or something, somebody say, do you see that right over there? You see that tree? And you say, no. And they kind of take you and say, look this way. Look at it from here. And they kind of try to position you a little bit, and they kind of maybe even get you by the head, and they look at it like this. That's like those things used to be in the funny paper. Remember those? It just looked like a big bunch of splattered colors to me. And people could see stuff in there. I have never, ever seen one of those. It looks like a big pile of ink splattered. That's all it looks like to me. I don't know what's in them. But somebody, and I've had people take me to them, I still don't see it. It's got a crick in my neck now. I don't get it. And so all I want to try to do is, I'm not trying to make light of your circumstance, but I am trying to maybe take you and help you to look just a little bit different at it and maybe help you to be able to deal with it just a little bit better. Notice what the psalmist says. Why was he depressed? Why was he discouraged? Look what he says here in this verse. And this is just verse 3, but you can back up and you can read the rest of the psalm. Here's what he says. He says, I remember God and was troubled. I complained and my spirit was overwhelmed. Notice what the psalmist does not say. The psalmist does not say, I am depressed because I lost my job. Psalmist does not say, I am depressed because I'm broke. The psalmist does not say, I am depressed because my children are monsters. He doesn't say, I am depressed because of a death in my family. He doesn't say, I am depressed because of whatever reason. Generally, if somebody was to walk up to you and say, what was wrong? What's wrong? They'd just look at you and say, Tommy, you look rough today. What's wrong? That's the kind of question we would ask. And typically the response would be, this happened in my life. And I just, this happened. I just hadn't been feeling good this week. Hours been cut at work. And, I might lose my job. So-and-so's been sick, been having to do this, been having to. That's generally the way we answer. Somebody would say, you look kind of down. What's wrong? And we would tell them what happened. Business is bad. Health is bad. Money. We'd tell them why. But notice what the psalmist says. He doesn't do that. What does he say? He says, I remembered God and was troubled. And so what he says here is the psalmist doesn't point at what the actual situation was. Here's what he says. And I wonder if he realized what he was saying. Because he says this. He says, I remembered God and was troubled. What causes depression? What causes discouragement? It's not so much what happens to us. It's what we allow it to do to us. It's what we do with it. The psalmist says, I had some dangerous contemplations. I began to think about this, and I love the word contemplate. That's one of my favorite words in the whole English language. If somebody walks up to you and says, you say, I'm just thinking. Well, that don't mean much. Some people, it doesn't mean anything. But if somebody tells you, I'm contemplating. Now, that's some heavy thinking right there. And that's what I believe the psalmist was doing. He was really mulling this thing over, and he was thinking about all the things that went wrong. He thought about what he could have done, what he should have done. Thought about what happened, what didn't happen, what he wished he would have done, what he could have done different, what this person did and what that person did. Because he says, you know what? All of a sudden, God flashed into my mind, and I was troubled. Well, several things about that statement. If he remembers God, what does that mean he had already done? He had forgotten God. He hadn't been thinking about God. And so he's telling us right off, he'd been thinking about the wrong thing. Let's think about it. What generally happens when things go bad in our life? We begin to think about a lot of different things. How am I going to get even? Might be one of them. That goes back to that anger message. You know, how am I going to get even? What could I have done different? Why did they do that to me? Why did they say that about me? Why did they do that? And we began to think about it. And we began to think, God doesn't care about me. You know, you think about it. There are a lot of stories. I mentioned picking a text for this passage this morning. There are a lot of passages in the Bible that I could have pulled up. Elijah, others that could have said, you know, God's forgot about me. And so what is one of the things that causes our depression? It's not so much what happens to us. It's how we react to it. Let me just throw something at you. And you pick the situation. But I'm going to make one up, and you think this through for a moment. Anytime, has there ever been a time in your life when, let's say, for example, I don't know, your eggs weren't cooked just like you liked them? I'm just thinking of something, you know. Maybe your eggs were runnier than you like them. You know. And you thought, well, no big deal. I'll just kind of stir them up in my grits. You know. And I'll never even know the difference. I'll throw a little salt on them, and I'll just eat them. Another day comes along, and you got those same runny eggs, and you snap. I mean, you have a hissy fit. You know, I'm not eating these eggs. You know, whatever. That may not be the best advice I've ever given you. You know what I'm talking about. Have the very same thing happen, and one day you're just like, well, it could be worse. I'll just, you know. I'll eat around them. Somebody come in and do something, and ordinarily, no problem. Somebody comes in to clean them and says, Martin, you didn't get this clean. Well, okay, I'll get it straightened out for you. Other times they bring that same shirt in and say, you didn't get this clean. Say, yes, I did. You got that on there after you left here. You wouldn't do a customer that way, would you? No? Okay. I'm just checking. You know what I'm talking about. One day it hits you, and you just, Another day, it's like somebody threw gas in your face. You just, right? Come on now, help me. I know I'm not the only one that acts that way. Help me, Melissa. Me and you's nothing like him. Yeah, okay.
I'm working on it.
Okay, that's right. Yeah, we all have that happen sometimes. You've probably been on the other end of that. You said something that was basically nothing to somebody, and poof, they blow up on you. Yeah, think about it. It's not what happened. It's how we deal with it. And so the psalmist says up front, my mind wasn't right. I was thinking about it. And I was thinking this through, and I was thinking the wrong things. You know, I've told y'all before, my grandmother, not this one, she's the one that put sweet potatoes in, pineapple into sweet potatoes and messed them up. Different grandma. She thought I had forgot that, so I had to say it 2 weeks in a row. Different grandma. My grandma had a daughter-in-law that, I'm not sure what word would describe her feelings. I really hate to say she hated her. You think that'd be all right? She hated her. Okay? I mean, she just, it was terrible. And I don't remember if it was a birthday card, a Mother's Day card. Mother's Day card. See, I got to get my cue back here, get this story straight. Mother's Day card. Personally, I thought it was a right pretty card. Had some yellow flowers all over it. I told y'all about this card before. Yellow flowers on it and a little bowl of lemons. My grandma left this card sitting on the dryer for months. Left it sitting there. You know why? Not because it had a pretty picture on it. Not because it had a nice little thing inside. Not because it said, love Betty. Whatever. But because it had lemons on the picture, she picked that card out special and sent it. And her little message is, you're sour. You're thinking about it too much. You know, you're just thinking about it too much. Let it go. Okay? You know, you may not have a... Your story may be a little different than that, but I promise you, the way we think about things... Bible says what? As a man... Y'all don't know that verse, huh? You don't even talk about it. As a man thinketh... So is he. Listen, guarantee you, how you think about it. Wasn't a circumstance. So he says, first of all, what happened? Dangerous contemplation. Second thing he says was, I complained. Now, I know some of you right now are going, I'm not listening. I told you last week, I'm going to be in your business the next few weeks. Not only, because here's what happens. If you think dangerous thoughts, you're going to say disruptive things. It's just that simple. You know, it's going to come flying out when you don't even think about it. Yeah, and so he says, I thought bad things, and then I complained. You notice what he says? He doesn't even mention whatever it was that happened. Listen, in other words, what I'm telling you is, I'm not telling you that the pain is not real. I'm not telling you today that you're not lonely, that you're not grieving, that you're not hurting. What I'm saying to you today, based on what the psalmist taught us, based on the Word of God, is that how we respond to it is more a part of how we feel than what happened. He says, I thought bad things, and then I began to complain. Let me tell you what happens when you complain. Several things happen. Kind of depends on your audience. Depending on who you're speaking to, when you complain, this is what happens. They stand there and you're complaining. Let's just say you're complaining about a problem at work. And as you complain about your problem at work, the person who you are complaining to is standing there and they're kind of sympathizing with you on the outside. But on the inside, they're thinking, thank God I don't work there. Boy, I thought my job was bad. You know what you did? You're complaining just to encourage them. You ever thought about that? Or here's the other thing, depending on who you're talking to. You start complaining, half the people you complain to don't care, and the other half think you deserve it. Yeah, that's what happens to complaining. But let me tell you what really happens when you complain. You know this. When you hear somebody start complaining, I'll be on my grandma's. My grandma Wednesday at lunch started to tell me something. I said, I don't want to hear it. I don't care. I don't want to hear it. Just don't even say it. I don't want to hear it. You know, because you know what happens? You know, when you get around an old negative person like that, you know, yeah, you know, there went my Christmas. Yeah, gonna be pineapple and the sweet potatoes for sure. You know, here's what happens. What happens when you hear somebody complain? You think that. What do you do when you start hearing somebody complain? So, somewhere in their complaint, don't they start to sound like the grown-ups on Snoopy? And you just kind of like, will you ever hush? You know who hears you the most when you complain? You do. That's exactly how far it gets. It just falls right out of your mouth, makes a U-turn, goes right back in your ear. And you know what happens? When we begin to complain and rehearse all our problems, we remember some stuff we left out before. And the story just gets bigger. Yes, somebody lost their job. Yes, there's been a death in the family. Yes, the children are sick. Yes, those things are real. But when we begin to dwell on them and think about them and complain about them, they tend to take on kind of a life of their own. And so he says, the reason for my depression was my own thinking. And somebody called it stinking thinking. And my own communication, I complained. And then he's thinking, just really what he says overall is just destructive considerate. Just, I looked at the whole, you ever looked at it and said, this whole thing stinks? Yeah, that's kind of where it gotten to. And so notice, very carefully, read the psalm. Again, I just have time to hit the highlights. He doesn't say because of this, because they did this to me, because this didn't happen. And you know what the problem with this is? When you begin to have these lousy thoughts and you begin to complain, eventually you will come to the place where you say, God doesn't love me. God doesn't care. God has abandoned me. And that's why I'm in this situation. You move from what actually happened to turn around and you end up throwing it all at God's feet. The reasons. But then look what he says happened. And it's interesting as he tells us about what happens because of his depression, because I noticed something very interesting. He says here, my spirit was overwhelmed. Now, I don't exactly know how to describe that. But if you've ever been there, you know exactly what he means. I told him at 8:30, I'll tell you all the same thing. If you don't know what I'm talking about, in just a moment, we're going to sing an invitation. Run, don't walk to this altar and say, thank you, God, that I have no clue what He's been talking about. But I seriously doubt many people will be here over that reason, because most of us can identify with the psalmist. We've had bad thoughts. We've groaned and complained to the point where our spirit became overwhelmed. We get to the place where we're just emotionally, we're devastated. Your spirit is the part of you that is emotional. You get to the point where you laugh when you should cry, you cry when you should laugh. You know, you walk around, you sit down. You ever walked into somebody and you saw them sitting there and they're staring at the television? You say, what are you watching? Huh? I don't know. Didn't even realize it was on. Now, they may have been asleep, but you know what I'm talking about. They get to the place where their spirit is just devastated. It seems like nothing can make them happy. Nothing can make them laugh. Nothing can make them bring joy in their life. Well, what happens? When you're in a place where nothing can bring joy into your life, what are you doing? You're just digging the hole deeper. And so now, when nothing brings joy, when your spirit becomes devastated, what do? You begin to think even worse thoughts. And you begin to complain even more. And you get even more devastated. And you think even worse thoughts. And you complain even more. And it just is a vicious cycle. The results feed the cause. And so he says here, he says, I was devastated. I was overwhelmed. I complained. A spirit that's devastated. Look at the next thing he says happened. He says, you hold my eyes waking. You ever felt like that about 2 o'clock in the morning? Yeah, like somebody had propped sticks up under your eyelids. Well, what happens? At 2 o'clock in the morning, everybody else is asleep. It's quiet, it's dark, and what do you do at 2 o'clock in the morning when you cannot sleep? You start doing what? Thinking. Probably what kind of thoughts? Negative thoughts. Which leads you to do what? Complain. Which does what? Just further overwhelms your spirit. Which makes it harder to do what? Sleep. Which makes you do what? Think more thoughts. Which makes you do what? You see what happens? It just keeps feeding itself. It's like a disease that is self-duplicating. It just continues. Then what happens? You can't sleep all night. And so you got to get up at 7, 8 o'clock and you got to go to work. And now you're walking around work like a zombie. And what happens? The first person you meet up with walks up to you and goes, my goodness, what happened to you? You know, you can't walk up to the one that says, hey, your hair looks nice today, you smell good, good to see you, happy, have a good day. You got to walk up on the one that says, good grief. Man, did they drag you to work? What happened to you? You know, then right after that, you got to run into your boss and he says, I need you to get this and this done. And you're like, okay, you know, and you're a zombie. And then you get in trouble at work and then what happens? It just starts all over. It just starts all over. And think about it. Some of you here, if you're honest this morning, you know how it works. It gets so far removed from what it actually is about. It becomes this monster that lives on its own. One of the things that I read about several years ago about research into cancer was that one of the things that tumors do, according to this article I was reading, said that tumors, what causes them to be able to survive and duplicate is that they send out chemicals into the body that causes the body to literally bring a blood supply to the tumor. That literally causes the body to grow veins and grow and carry blood to that tumor. And so in other words, that tumor, that body is feeding the very thing that is eating it alive. And one of the promising things they said in research was finding a way to block that chemical, that where the body wouldn't give it blood, and therefore if it didn't have blood, it would die. The tumor. And that's exactly what depression, discouragement, loneliness, sorrow, grief, pain, whatever you call it, does. It just keeps growing. He says, I can't sleep. Look what else he says. He says, I don't even know what to say. I'm so troubled, I cannot speak. You ever had anybody ask you what's wrong and you just kind of look at them like, I don't even know where to begin? You ever been that person? Somebody says, what's wrong? And you're just kind of like, I don't even know where to start. I don't even know how to tell you. The psalmist says, I was so troubled, I couldn't sleep, I couldn't speak. You know what happens? I can't sleep, I can't speak, I can't get it out, I can't deal with it. So what happens? I go back to thinking about it some more. And the process just repeats and repeats and repeats. And now my loneliness, sorrow, depression, grief, pain, anguish has grown to the point where it is so far removed from the thing that originally started it. Again, I'm not making light of your situation, your circumstance. And listen, I'm not saying you're not human. You'd have to be dropped on your head or something for you not to remember, you know, grief and pain. You know, it's normal at Christmas and Thanksgiving and birthdays and anniversaries to remember loved one. It's normal, you know, if you lose your job to be, because it's normal. But think about it. For some of you, if you were honest, you know that that happened so long ago that it's now kind of taken on a life of its own. Not making light of it. I'm saying we've allowed Satan, let's just get right down to the bottom line of it. We've allowed Satan to make it bigger than it ever was. See, you know like I do, the Bible says God wants us to have a peace that passes all understanding. He says that even we walk in the valley of the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil. See, we know that's the God. We know that's the life God wants for us. So if we don't have it, then who's the problem? We've got to come back and say it's Satan. That's where we really got to get down to. You know, that's one of the problems with most counselors and psychiatrists today. Try to deal with the problem without ever getting to the root of it. The problem is Satan is just continually fueling the fire. So what does the psalmist do different? How does he unload this burden? Tells us that too. Got to drop down to verse 10. And I don't have time, don't have room on the screen to get all that up there for you. But if I was to take the first 5-6 verses and say, okay, read these. And if I was to take and somehow cut these apart and say, read these 6 verses. And then tell you to read these last 10 or 11 verses and ask you, you think the same person wrote these? And you'd say, no way in the world did the same person write these. Because this first guy, oh man, he can't sleep, he can't talk, he's crying in his bed, he thinks God has cast off forever, oh la la. These last 10 verses, he says this is my infirmity, I will remember the years of the right hand of the Most High. What is the first thing that the psalmist teaches us in dealing with discouragement and depression? It is a recognition of responsibility. This is my infirmity. I'm not trying to be mean. I'm not trying to be harsh. Again, I sympathize with you. All of us have those battles and pains in life. But what the psalmist teaches us to say is this is the problem. It's not Archie's fault. It's not Tommy's fault. There's an old spiritual that says, it's not my brother, not my sister, but it's me, O Lord, standing in the need of prayer. This is my infirmity. No one is going to get it for me. No one is going to fix it. No one else is going to come along and take this burden. No one else is going to come along and take this off of me. This is mine. I've got to deal with it. I'm going to have to do something about it. I've tried to give it away. Nobody wants it. You know, I've tried to everything. And so sooner or later we have to come to the point where we say, this is the problem. Much like we talked about with anger last week. This is the problem. Narrow it down and say, right here it is. For some of you, it may be that you have an issue going all the way back to childhood. It may be something that happened a few weeks ago. It may have been something that happened this morning, but you've got to label it. When you walk into the doctor, what does he do? He walks in and says, what? What's wrong today? How can I help you? And you don't look at him and say, you the doctor, figure it out. Guess. You say, well, Doc, mom hurts. Listen, Psalmist says we're going to have to be honest and deal with this issue. This is my infirmity. Then notice what all he says. Once he identifies it, says this is it. Look what he does. And again, I told you last week about anger, what to do with it, get rid of it. May seem really simple. Here's what he does. He says, this is my infirmity, but. One of the biggest words in the English language. This is my infirmity, but I'm going to remember the years of the right hand of the Most High. Look at a change in this man. From back here in the early verses when he said, I'm complaining, I can't talk. He says, you know what? I'm going to think about God. I'm going to think about the good things that God has done. I'm going to think about the blessings of God on my life. Here's what every person in here knows. And you know this, you may not be willing to admit it where you are right now, but for every bad thing in your life, you can think of at least 50 good things God has done. I think about, and I don't remember exactly how it worked, Rhonda, somebody she knows, somebody she worked with, who a few weeks ago on one day they had a child, and on the next day the mother's, where am I at? Oh, over here with Barbara, my mind going blank, with their granddaughter. You know, have a birth and a death right there together, and the emotion of that. And Russell talked about that as he testified. Yeah, as you know, how he saw God at work in that. You know, and Russell, I got to tell you, what a great way to look at things. That, you know, you can see God still working even in the valley. You know, and so what the psalmist says, you know what? Yeah, there's bad things. This is my infirmity, but I'm going to think about the good things God is doing. And that's tough. Listen, that's tough. That's hard work. Because you know what? It's much easier sometimes to think about the bad things that happen in life. It's much easier to think about those things. You know, Russell gave us a great example last week of saying, look, this is the, you know, I see good in this. God's still on the throne even in a time of sorrow. You know, I think about Archie and his family over there. You know, it was amazing to watch how they dealt with passing of Archie's father, you know, how their faith, how they saw that even in that, you know, that God was at work, God had done this. You know, listen, what the psalm says, this is my infirmity, but I'm going to think about the good things God's done. Listen, every one of us get up every day with a choice. We can look at our infirmity, or we can look at the good things God is doing. I think about the man who hired me at Merida. Had a bad hand, was damaged at birth. I know the story. I didn't see it, but years ago, Boss Baker. Some of y'all may remember seeing their bread men in a grocery store. They had those great big metal trays and had to fold down the sides. And John talked about how he wanted a job. He worked, did vending in the mill, and he wanted a job with the bread. Wanted to get in the bread business, and said he went and talked to Mike about getting a job. And said Mike told him, said I don't think you can work these trays. I tell you what, give me one of them. Let me take it home. I'll be back tomorrow. And I'll figure out how to do this. I've watched him take a straight drive truck and he'd take that bad hand, hook it around there and change those gears. We had a different system. He'd take those trays in his hand, he couldn't do anything with it, and he'd pull those and he'd balance it on that hand. He'd move that around. One thing he couldn't do was roll up his own shirt sleeves. The only thing I've ever heard him ask anybody to help him do, roll up my shirt sleeve, I'm getting hot. Didn't want any government help, didn't want any pity, didn't want any sorrow, wanted a job, wanted to make the best. Listen, this is my infirmity, or this is what God has done. Which one are you going to focus on? Which one are you going to dwell on? Redirection of his reflection, and he decided, I'm going to rejoice. I'm going to meditate of thy work. He says, you know what? I'm going to think different. He says, your way is great, Lord. If you read these last 10 verses of this chapter, he talks about how great is my God. You're the God that does wonders. You're the God that sends lightning through the sky. You're the God that controls the seas. You are a great God. And that's what I'm going to choose to focus on. Listen, I could start right over here with Tommy. I could go around the room. And I could say, what's your infirmity? I can start right here with me. What's your infirmity? And every one of us, right around the room, all the way around, from the youngest to the oldest, except maybe Dante over there. He's happy as he could be sitting there. He got his grandma wiping his face. He's just tickled pink. But every one of us could give our infirmity. This is what's wrong. This is what's hurting. And we could do it fairly quickly. Might be a little bigger battle to say, okay, but this is what I'm going to think about. This is what I'm going to dwell on. This is what I'm going to face. This is the God I'm going to remember. This is the thing I'm going to dwell on. My infirmity or God? I'm not making light of your circumstance. I could tell you my infirmities just as well as you can. Catch me on the right day and I will. Okay? I'm human just like you are. I got them and I'll share them. I'll let you be part of them. Every day we get up, we have a choice. This is my infirmity. This is the day the Lord has made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Sometimes we have to do that hourly, depending on where you work, who your family is. You know, Thanksgiving coming up and all your in-laws and outlaws coming in, you might have to walk around going, there is my infirmity, but this is the minute the Lord has made. I'll rejoice and be glad in it. Some of you are going to be reminded of empty seats at the table. Some of you are going to be reminded of a lot of things. Depression, discouragement, sorrow, loneliness, grief, pain, whatever you call it, can take on a life of its own. You can say, this is my infirmity. But I will remember the things of God. I want to ask you to bow your heads this morning. What is that thing that has become larger than life to you? Doesn't mean it's not real. Nobody's making light of it. Doesn't mean it doesn't hurt. But has it come to the point where it is controlling your life? The Bible says, greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. If you're a child of God, you don't have to let that pain, that hurt, that sorrow control you. Again, I'm not saying that Christmas comes and you're not going to take a moment and step off to the side and reflect. You may go to the cemetery and cry. You know, a lot of things, a lot of emotion this time of year. What I'm saying is that we don't have to allow that to control our every action. This is my infirmity, but this is my God. Some of you here this morning, you need to come and you need to kneel at this altar and say, Lord, I want to thank you for getting me through my battles. I want to thank you for getting me to this point. There have been times that because of circumstances, because of situations, I didn't know if I could put another foot in front of the other one. I didn't know if I could wake up, didn't know if I wanted to wake up and face another day. But God, you've been good and gracious and you've brought me through that. And I want to thank you for that.